The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Saw. Simon Woolley is a member of the House of Lords, the first black man to head an Oxbridge college, and a policy changemaker who has the ear of prime ministers and the future king. But this is a lord who wants to shake up the establishment, an outsider who knows how important it is to bring underrepresented voices to the table. He has written his memoirs called Saw, but not so much a memoirs, more a, perhaps you like a call to action or policy. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from sunny Cambridge, he informs me. Simon Woolley. Simon, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Great to be on the program.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. You've called the book Saw. It's got a foreword by the Reverend Jesse Jackson. So I'm already a fan as we talk. Tell me a little bit about because you're originally from Leicester, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct. And if you know anything about Leicester, we have a river running through it called the River Saw. So I thought it would be a great way to describe my humble journey to high office and ensconced in this wonderful college at Cambridge University.
I mean, Leicester is multicultural, if you like. There's large populations of third degree, from all over the world. I suppose you could call it if you wanted to call it something inappropriate, the empire, if you like. But it's a microcosm of Britain at the moment. And you've got the football ground, and you've got the rugby ground, and you've got sort of Middle England meeting the New England, if you like.
Don't forget the cricket.
Yes, of course.
So, it is a mini, it's a metropolis with teeming diversity, with full of different cultures. And I grew up in the 60s and 70s when the first Ugandan Asians came to Leicester. My mother's generation come from the Windrush into this melting pot, if you like, of energy, of diversity, of creativity. And as a working class kid having been brought up on a council estate, I learned that my way in life with ducking and diving, sneaking into the cinema, selling tickets at Filbert Street football ground as an 11-year-old. And, it's those little bricks that make you the person you are today.
And so what gave you your first, if you like, inklings that some things needed to change? Because, we have this tendency, and I think it's a particularly English trait, to look back on the past with rose-tinted binoculars almost, because, the past is a different country. They do things differently. In Spain, we have a bit of this as well, because people are harking back to, the glory days of Franco, believe it or not. Some are, not all. Yeah, exactly. But people seem to think, it was easier in the 60s and the 70s. But when you speak to people who are actually there and actually remember it, yes, we had, know, we had, you know, diversity. Yes, we had, you know, people making their way, but we also had, you know, the National Front, for example.
At the National Front, we had the skinheads. And I remember as a child, I must have been no older than about 10, seeing skinheads beat up an elderly Sikh man. And I knew that he was Sikh because he had a turban. And imagine as a kid, 10-year-old kid, you're walking in the streets on St. Matthew's and you see an elderly man slumped with blood pouring from his head. I mean, that vision that never leaves you about the horrors of people that would bash somebody up with blood pouring from their head for no other reason than the colour of their skin. I remember that being in the playground and skinheads would walk by and they'd be chanting, "Send the wogs," excuse my language, "send the wogs to Vietnam." And I went home. I knew it was pejorative. I knew that it was negative. But I went home to my mum and said, "Why do they want to send me to Vietnam?" And and she held me and cried. I mean, you know, because she understood her child, her little boy, was subject to the horrors of extreme racism. And I kept thinking, what's Vietnam? What's Vietnam? And then, you know, of course, when you get a bit older, we saw those news flashes of the helicopters of Vietnam, what was on fire at the time. So this is the backdrop. So, you know, it wasn't all this rose-tinted view of the bygone past. It was quite brutal, and particularly brutal for black and brown people. But we survived. Not only did we survive, we thrived. You see Leicester today is a vibrant city. The Caribbeans of my generation, you know, we our parents told us you had to be stronger, you had to be smarter, and we become resilient. And I think what I want to do now with this book, Saw, is impart some of that learning, that resilience, that activism to this generation, the young generation, the Black Lives Matter generation, so they can take their part. I've learned from Reverend Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Bernie Grant, Diane Abbott. It's my time to pass things on. And a college here in this wonderful, you know, elite college, I've got to say to 850 students, look, I want you to be academically brilliant, but I want more than that. I want you to be good citizens to do great things in the world. That's my gift in this place right now.
You see, you just said a couple. I do a phone-in show, a current affairs phone-in show on a Tuesday, and it's called Viewpoint, and it's 2 hours of open mic, and we're a broad church. I always call it a broad church, and there is no delay. So you come on, you're live. It's an interesting experience, I must admit, but there are certain words that if I say them on air, they will trigger people. And you just dropped one of them, which is Black Lives Matter. Now, to some people, that is a self-serving organization. There's some people who say that, and it is all about statues, and it is all about, you know, there's some hidden agenda behind it, and basically they would point to you and say, well, look, this is a guy who's made it. We don't need Black Lives Matter because they're basically pushing their own agenda, and we don't have equality anymore. How would you answer them?
Sure. Well, I would say, let's not get down a cul-de-sac. The thing about the Black Lives Matter movement, the broad movement, is the biggest and longest race protest ever seen in this country. And the thing about it is, the interesting thing about it is that it wasn't just black people on the street, it was black and white, and actually young and old. And basically they were saying, we're better than this. We recognize the persistent, if you like, persistent race inequalities that see young men stopped and searched more often, that see education in which black kids exams get marked better when they're blind. And we're better, we're bigger. And if we're honest and confront the uncomfortable truths, then what we do is we unleash talent for everyone. This is not I win, you lose. It's I win, we all win. So it's turning it on its head. It's saying that we are this teeming, diverse nation. It's not one against the other. Let's not go down a cul-de-sac of hidden agendas. Let's hold, you know, arm in arm and saying, let's be the best we can.
How did you take your steps then from the council estates of Leicester through to seat in the House of Lords, you know, seat where you are now in Cambridge, one of the finest universities in, you know, in the land, if not the world. You know, what were the first steps? What, because it could have been, it would have been very easy to be, still be that ducking and diving. I can see you touting tickets outside Leicester, you know, outside Filbert Street or whatever. I mean, was there an inspirational
question?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good question. I think the first thing would be, the love that my mother showed me, you know, a white woman from Wales who fostered and adopted me and showed me the love to be who I am today. You know, that's, I've met my birth mother and have a wonderful relationship with her too. And so there's lots of love there, no doubt about it. But that love that says, my little boy, you can do anything. You can go anywhere. And then you run with that. And of course, it's not a walk in the park, but you go step by step and you have good grace, you have humility, but you're driven. And then people recognize it. And I guess like you, that ask yourself, how many times have you been knocked down? How many times have you been doubted? And you get back up. And what's critical in these conversations is turning self-doubt into self-confidence. And it's not in a self-confidence way that is big-headed or arrogant. It says, I can be the best I can be. I can serve and I can do, hopefully, great things in the world.
But how important is it to inspire young people and say, break the mold, be your own person. Do not go down what you're being shown on YouTube or empty or to videos and whatever, because that's not real life. How important is that?
It's really important. I mean, I think the thing is that I'm lucky enough because I have different platforms to try to inspire, to try and give that self-belief. But, you know, let's be frank. It's not just about inspiration. You have to have a pathway. You have to demonstrate, okay, you need to study hard. You need to work hard. You need to be decent to your neighbors, decent to the family around you. So, yes, you want the inspiration, clearly, but you also have to do the doing. And sometimes the doing's tough because the doing is the heavy lifting, the hard work, the values that say, that's easy, you know, that's the easy road, and it might be not the right road. That's the harder road. Which one am I going to take? And that is down to the individual.
It's the grind, isn't it? It's because everybody, we live in a society at the moment that wants instant results. And that's a lot of
instant results, instant gratification. I remember working with Reverend Al Sharpton, and we're talking to Peckham, and we're talking to some black kids who had been expelled from school. And back then, Reverend Al Sharpton was barrel chested, a big guy, but you know, he's a friend, a wonderful orator. And he walked into these guys, there's about 50 of them, and he looked at them, and he points like this, and he said, you, let me just tell you this, if I knock you down, that's on me. If I come back and you're still on the ground, that's on you. And these black kids are all sullen, looked at each other and nodded. And in that moment, you could see them realizing, actually, this is down to me. In spite of all the obstacles, I need to lift myself up and go from strength to strength.
It's an interesting, wasn't it? Because, I mean, I've spoken to some friends of mine about this, because the Afro-Caribbean experience, which is mainly the British experience, as opposed to the African-American experience, are slightly different. And although Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson I call Jesse Jackson a speech. There's a movie out called Summer of Soul, which came out about the New York 69 concerts. And he speaks on that. And that's less than 12 months after, Martin Luther King is killed, and he's electric. I mean, he's absolutely as an orator. But the experience for young people of color in the UK is slightly different from the American, because of how they arrived in the countries that they're in.
It is. You know, the thing is about when I bring out Al Sharpton over here, he says to me, Simon, you have no idea that you have something very special here in the UK. And I said, what's that, Al? And he said, when I go to your meetings, I see Africans, Caribbeans, Asians, and white people all together in a hall working for a better society. In America, it's so divided. It's so divided. You have Africans over here, Caribbeans over here, Asians over here, Hispanics over there. He said, how do you do it? And what you spoke about, we have a British experience that is not American, that we often join forces a lot better. So we learn from them that civil rights activism that it comes from often the churches, but they can learn from us. When I mean, you in Spain at the moment, when you come back to the UK, you go into London and you walk around London and you see the teeming diversity that broadly gets on with each other. You know, there's very few places on the planet that have that wonderful team in diversity that London has. Now, I try and talk about it in the book to say, look, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. We've come a long way, but there's still much more to be done. And I think this last year or so, 2 years after George Floyd died and of COVID, which disproportionately affected Black people, that it says, let's still be impatient for a better UK, a better world.
It's important to be angry about what's happened. It's important to protest about what's happened. But it's equally important, this goes back to something that you did in the 90s, it's always equally important to educate yourself and use your vote.
Yeah, no, I'm pleased you said that, because I think there is a democratic deficit, and you'll have seen me in the House of Lords imploring my fellow peers to have automatic voter registration, to say, look, if you want to change our world, then stand up and be counted, register to vote, use your democratic voice, and don't ask for change, but demand it through the ballot box. You know, I'm a disciple of Dr. Martin Luther King. You know, and I know, Dr. King had a dream. We know he had a dream because we've got it on our walls. But he had more than a dream, he had a plan. And step one of the plan was to have a democratic voice. Too many people in this country, I guess in Spain too, don't use what is free, but what is very powerful. And that is the vote, the democratic franchise. And I implore young people to understand power, where it lies, how it works, how we can influence it, how we can make it work for us. Because otherwise, often people are passengers. Things happen to us rather than we feel that we can play our role. Of course, it's not easy, but it's there to be understood and to be used.
It would have been very easy for you to sort of sit back and go, I'm in the House of Lords, I'm in Cambridge, game over, done it. Okay, see you, I'm off to appear and I'm a celebrity or something like that, or I think I'll improve my golf game. But you don't. But you're still, you're doing interviews, you're writing these books.
Right. I'm in the House of Lords. The thing is this, look, I feel that I have a mission, that I want my life to be worth lived. And that, as you said, is not sitting in the House of Lords going to dinners. And it means like you on your radio program, that seeking to have conversations, seeking to make a difference. And I feel, I'm sure like you, you feel very lucky to be in the seat that you're in. You're speaking to tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. And if you can have a conversation, you can have a conversation that moves people to be nicer to themselves, nicer to other people, that we tackle big issues. You feel that you're waking up and you're doing something worthwhile. Now, we're privileged to be in that role. And I say to you, to me, we mustn't squander it. We must realize, acknowledge the space that we have, and have these conversations. Somebody listening to this program, our conversation, will say, I'm going to do more. I'm going to do more. I'm going to realize more because of this conversation.
Just to let the listeners know, I can see this, but he was actually just clapping his hands there, just in case he was, you know, he just attacked something with a baseball bat or something. It's thank you, Simon.
Get animated.
This is the thing, and perhaps, you know, after this period we've been through and the situation that we find ourselves in, people have had that time to think and wonder where they are and where we go from here. I want to go back to something just at the beginning of the book, because you talk about, we're talking about the big things, and I won't keep you for long. We talk about the big things, but when you go down to it, it's all a series of little steps. And you mentioned family and neighbours. And so if we are to change the world and make it more representative and have more people of colour in the places where they matter, right. It starts, as we know, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step.
Right. No, it's 100%. And that you mentioned before that, with the social media and people want instant gratification, that, we've got to revert back to that the lifting, the building blocks that make us, that give us confidence, that give us knowledge, that give us a better understanding of what we need to do. Of course, people want, big houses and money and et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's our values, the values that we start with will guide us. And in a way, that can really make us happy. That just knowing that you wake up in the morning and you're trying to make your society, your community a better place is a good feeling. Yes, you've got to make ends meet. But I keep asking myself the question, I keep saying to the students, yes, I want you to have a brilliant education. And I want you to, go with a double first or whatever. But for what? What is it for? Is it for you just to have a big house and a big car? Or do you have another purpose out there? And that's down to us. That's down to us to reflect and then guide. So these conversations, I hope, that will inspire people to say, I'm going to go to Simon Woolley's College. For my publishers, they will say, I hope they buy the book.
What's it like, just quickly, what's it like reflecting on from Leicester, from standing on and getting abused racially on a line to a barbershop to where you are now? I mean, it must be it's been an interesting journey thus far, Simon, we have to admit.
It's interesting, I remember listening to something that Mick Jagger said. He was given £1 million to write his memoir, and he gave £1 million back, I think, because he could afford to, but he said, it's too painful. That going down that road of reflection is too painful. And when I went back, there are some uncomfortable times and it's painful. And what happens is that you close that lid to get on. And I opened it up and laid myself bare. And I did so because I hoped that others would see it's not where you start from. It's where you go. But how you go. And I thought if I could impart that to a younger generation, that the path ahead can be what you make it. You have to fight, you have to be resolute. And if people could gain some of that, job done. I would feel that I've got something, a little bit to say.
Do you have final question for you, because I know you're busy. Do you have hope? Because people say, oh, they're all snowflakes. They can't remember what it was like in the day. They don't work hard. And I always say, they've just been through a something pandemic. Locked in, if I had been 17 years old and locked in my room in the 80s, who knows what I would have come out as? Probably more gothic than I am already. But I mean, do you think that young people, students, aren't given, the kudos and the respect because of what they've just been through and what they can do?
I really do. I mean, I'm lucky. I sit in this position and I have 850 students, and I we have our formal dinners and everyone dresses up, and I give a talk and listen to them, and I'm inspired. And I think that they need a bit of guidance. They need encouraging. We're always knocking them. They're doing this. They're doing that. Give them a break. Give them a break, give them some encouragement, give them a pathway and say, look, it's yours, own it, make of it that a lot better than it is now. It's down to you. You know, when you tell young people that and you empower them, you see them glow, You see, that's my brother, the activist. He knows Jesse Jackson and he's telling me I can do great things. It's great.
It's been an inspirational interview. It's an inspirational Wednesday. I'm about to go out and start marching. I don't know about anything else out here. But this book is called Soar. It's by Simon Woolley. Simon, if people want to get in touch with you or follow you, where can they find more information about yourself?
The thing is, I don't do social media because I think often it's too toxic. But I do LinkedIn. People can find me on LinkedIn. I think it's a more sensible space for conversation. If people want to find me on LinkedIn, I will link back.
I was just looking forward to the TikTok videos, to be honest with you, Simon. I can see that happening.
Animated. Power to the people. Keep hope alive. You mean that one.
Exactly. The book,
it's been great.
Book is called Soar. It's by Simon Woolley. Simon, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, man.
Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.